5 and a 4-3-6. Well done.
Kansas City Chiefs like D4.
I want to be a Chief forever.
Hello and welcome to Chiefs Blueprint. I'm your host, Pete Sweeney, and this is Chiefs reporter BJ Kissel. BJ, what a week it's been in Chiefs Kingdom. Earlier this week, Andy Reid and the team returned to Kansas City for the beginning of the offseason workout program, and as the Chiefs got back to practice, we found out the details of their upcoming 2015 schedule.
Pete, it's nice to have those guys back in the building. I had a chance to talk with some of those guys on Monday. I know they're excited to be here, but we were all excited to see the schedule finally come out. We knew who the home and away opponents were going to be. We knew that November 1st game was going to be in London, but it's nice to see where those divisional games line up, and we've got all those details coming later in the show.
Can't wait for that. And for me, the team's arrival is fitting with today's episode of Chiefs Blueprint because in a lot of ways, the recurring theme we'll explore is arrivals. From the literal arrival of running back Priest Holmes in the early 2000s to the figurative arrival of cornerback Sean Smith last season. But before we get into those two, we first need to touch upon one of the most critical positions for the Chiefs heading into 2015, the offensive line.
Pete, you're exactly right. And it's been a storyline throughout the entire offseason. We saw that at the beginning of free agency, bringing in the new guys, made the big trade for Ben Grubbs, the two-time Pro Bowler, and then signing veteran offensive lineman Paul Fanica. But then you've got the guys that were already here. Jeff Allen coming back from his elbow injury, and then Eric Fisher finally getting a healthy offseason. He can lift upper body. We know how important that is for an offensive lineman, particularly a left tackle. And then perhaps nothing's more important than the center position. Right now, Eric Kush may look to be that guy, although they may bring in some competition for him, but that's definitely a key storyline throughout the rest of this offseason.
Well, BJ, the voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holthus, sat down with Coach Heck to discuss the new additions to the unit, what we can expect heading into 2015. Here's that conversation.
On that 194 Mike we ran, you guys blocked the three. He's got to hit it in behind that nose guard.
Andy, some excitement in the offseason. He added some veterans, most notably Ben Grubbs in the trade with the Saints, but also Paul Fanica. What do those two guys help you?
One, to be adding veteran leadership, but when you look at Ben, here's a guy who's been a very physical player throughout his career. He's played at a high level. I like his tenacity on the field. His versatility, he's a good athlete, can move, get out in space. And we like to do some of that pulling our guards. When you look at Paul Fanica, a lot of people might not be as familiar with him, but I've been a big fan of his since he came out of school. I know Coach Reed drafted him, and he has got phenomenal technique. I mean, you look at a guy, wow, he really sticks his hands in there, and you love to see that with offensive linemen. His pass pro technique's terrific. He's another guy that's gotten better each year of his career. So while he's a veteran guy, he's still pretty young, and each year you've seen some improvement with him. So it's something to be excited about.
He's offensive lineman for Kansas City.
Yeah.
You got to tip your hat to him.
When you look in that Kansas City huddle, there are a lot of backup players out there. It's a credit to these Chiefs.
One of the most understated stats about this team the last 2 years is you've had either the youngest offensive line or one of the youngest, depending who's been out there. And last year, the lower third of the league with 49 sacks given up. But of your returning guys, of the younger guys, what has to happen there for them to take the jump up you want them to have?
It is a young room. It's a young group. So there's, you know, pluses and minuses to that. But one of the exciting things is you get to watch a guy develop, and you get to, you know, that's my job to have a hand in helping to develop these guys. So expectation-wise, I want each one of these guys to be playing the best football of their career to date, right? If they're improving every year, this year should be their best year. And they're young guys that don't have a lot of miles on them, so they're healthy, they're strong, they're eager. I mean, every one of those guys wants to be great. They want to be good football players, and as coaches, our job is to find those things that can help them be a better player.
Everything's in segments in this league, and this next segment is the off-season program, the OTAs and so forth. What do you want to see at the end of the summer, so to speak, before you get them back for St. Joe and camp?
Our guys do a great job here. Coach Reed provides, you know, just this fantastic culture. They come in, they want to work, they're hungry. So they're going to work their tails off. And we're going to be spending a lot of time on fundamentals, pass pro fundamentals. We got to protect the quarterback better. And we'll introduce elements of our game. I mean, we'll have to get through some practices, so we got to install our offense. So we want them to leave here knowing our offense, knowing what techniques we're using. And this is our third year now for a lot of these guys, so they know what they're going to be working on. I'd say O-line's a lot like taking batting practice. I mean, we just got to get out there every day and take our cuts.
and go after people. And then when we leave them, they've got some time off, but they better come back in great shape. And the guys usually do a great job with that. But I want them to come back hungry and ready, not just to punch the clock, but to come with the same energy, the same enthusiasm, and then maintaining that throughout the season. You know, when you get into October, November, and further on, that they're attacking those drills and those fundamentals the same way they did early in the offseason. So that's what I expect from that.
I know I'm looking forward to seeing how this offensive line will shape up when training camp begins. And as we patiently wait for that training camp I'm talking about, it's good to know exactly when and where the Chiefs will be playing the regular season games this year. It's official, boys and girls. The Kansas City Chiefs 2015 schedule is out. And BJ, I know we're about 4 or 5 months away, but humor me a bit. What are 3 games you're looking forward to?
You want me to take 16 and narrow it down to just
please,
3?
If you can.
That's tough. And this is an interesting schedule, especially when you look early in the season. This team is going to be tested. 3 of the first 4 games are on the road. We look at that first one, traveling to take on the Houston Texans. J.J. Watt, Jadeveon Clowney, if he's healthy, that's going to be a big test for this team. But then you go to week 2. You have the short week early in the season, that Thursday night game. It's the only primetime game at Arrowhead Stadium against the Denver Broncos, where the Chiefs are 24-18. But 3 of the first 4 games on the road, that's huge. And you look at the week 3 game, Monday Night Football against the Packers. In the first 3 weeks, the Chiefs are in primetime twice. Chiefs fans have gotta like that. And then you have to look at November 1st, Wembley Stadium in London. Chiefs have an opportunity to go take on the Detroit Lions in front of the worldwide stage. Huge opportunity for this team.
And the cool thing is, if you can't make it to London, you'll be able to enjoy a little early morning Chiefs, an 8:30 a.m. start in Kansas City. That's a little breakfast mixed with some Chiefs, BJ.
I can have barbecue at 8:30 in the morning, so I'm good with it.
That's because it's delicious. Well, coming up, we'll take a closer look at a player who I know can't wait for 2015 because of the year he had in 2014. Stay with us.
Chiefs Blueprint is brought to you by Hy-Vee, where there's a helpful smile in every aisle. Prime Sport, get your tickets to the Chiefs tailgate party, presented by Bud Light, at primesport.com/Chiefs. And by the University of Kansas Hospital, the official healthcare provider of the Chiefs and the athlete in you. Coming up on Chiefs Blueprint.
I wasn't sure if he was ready to be a number one cornerback.
But Sean Smith really stepped his game up.
Slant near side, heart line broken up, Sean Smith! Broken up, played very well on the far side by Sean Smith. Throws it left side, it's intercepted! Sean Smith on the right sideline! A disaster for the Patriots here tonight.
That was a terrific defensive play.
Fires a pass and overthrows the intended receiver, it's incomplete. No flags!
Welcome back to Chiefs Blueprint. Last season, we watched the Chiefs went through a lot of adversity, especially on the defensive side of the football. Yeah, there were a lot of injuries to the unit right when the season began. But even before that, the team waved goodbye to Brandon Flowers, one of the best players in the secondary. BJ, with Flowers leaving, especially to a division rival, how important was it for Sean Smith to have the year that he had?
For him personally, I think it was huge, but it was also huge for the Chiefs defense. I mean, this is a unit that finished second in the NFL, allowing just 17.6 points per game, and Sean Smith was a huge part of that. He finished as Pro Football Focus's number 4 ranked cornerback in the NFL. This was a great Chiefs defense. You see what Bob Sutton wants to do with these corners, big physical guys, and Sean Smith at 6'3" definitely fits that bill. Had a fantastic season.
And I think a lot of times when a player like a Brandon Flowers leaves, it's easy to look on the outside of the team for answers. But as the experts explained, Sean Smith almost immediately proved ready for the challenge.
The San Diego Chargers have come to terms with cornerback Brandon Flowers.
Fans weren't 100% sure how this team is going to look now. They lost their best corner.
You're not exactly sure what you got, and you got some rookies.
I wasn't sure if he was ready to be a number 1 cornerback.
But Sean Smith really stepped his game up.
Slant near side, heart line broken up, Sean Smith!
A lot of people were just hoping he could be a number 2 corner.
And this is the Sean Smith the Chiefs invested in, maybe having his best quarter as a Chief.
If you look at the statistics, he ended up profiling out as a legit number 1.
I thought he was one of the best corners in the league.
I think he far exceeded the expectations, and I think that's a tribute first and foremost to Sean Smith, but also to what Bob Sutton was able to do defensively.
Good job. Nice job. Hey, keep winning third downs. We're going to be great. Let's go, baby. We're going out. Let's go. Come on, man.
That's Bob Sutton's thing, is to have the corners at the line of scrimmage and to disrupt the timing.
They hit the ground running, and we're on the same page from the beginning.
He locked up. Let's go.
He was always a really good fit for the way that the Chiefs envisioned themselves on defense.
He is that Richard Sherman type of corner. Big, physical.
Get in your face. Carries some confidence with him kind of guy.
Light work, man. Light work.
Rivers, handout. Chiefs roll the coverage to the near side. Slant pattern broken up. Played very well on the far side by Sean Smith.
Hey, there it is. There it is.
If you just stand next to the guy, I mean, he's a giant. I mean, you know, I mean, he's the kind of corner that you would want. If you got a big corner, you can put him on a big receiver.
He has the size, the strength to really bump a receiver and not let him get to where he wants to get.
Nice defensive play out there by number 21, Sean Smith.
And if you're going to throw a post-up type wide receiver at him, this is the wrong guy to go against because he's about as big a corner as you're going to find anywhere.
6'3", the former Miami Dolphin uses his wingspan. That's one thing general manager John Dorsey loves.
There was a lot of times where he's matched up against the number one wide receiver.
Three eligible. They've got a tackle over tackle. White split set. Fade pattern. Near side. Antonio Brown. Did he hang on to the ball? No, he did not. Sean Smith was covering him.
And the number one wide receiver didn't beat him a great deal over the top. Sean was in position. A lot of the time, Sean saw the field really well. And Sean Smith was able to make a lot of aggressive plays.
So slow your pedal down. When it's through a 3-by-1, and he has like a 3-yard split. You think it fade to come back. Hey, sticks mentality. Hey, something to get him in third and medium. Spot. Watch screen. Watch screen. Hark. It's been all like 7 routes and digs. Like
I thought that he was focused the entire year.
That one you can low-key be patient on.
In 2013, there were times where you thought maybe he just got lost.
Hey.
In 14, I just didn't think that happened.
Hey, Sam. We swung first. Now it's time to jump in.
There's not many teams in the NFL that are going to be able to have gone against that laundry list of good quarterbacks that they played this year and be able to hold every single one of them to under 300 yards passing. That speaks volumes about where this team was and where it's headed. And Sean Smith was a very vocal leader.
Like I said, nobody believes we can do it. You're going to come out here, you're going to ball out, you're going to smash these boys, all right? All right. Hey, put yourself on the map, man. All right. Turn it up on two. Fine, one, two.
That position is one that's judged a lot of times on failure and, you know, when you get beat. I don't think that he had too many of those.
He took over and became that number one corner. I think it surprised a lot of people and they felt a lot more comfortable headed into 2015.
And I think that if he just continues to play with the physicality and being able to diagnose what's coming and still be able to play free like he did in 2014, I think he'll be a really good corner in the league.
When we return,
up the middle, it goes to Holmes. Huge push and drives into the end zone.
I said, I'd love to see this guy turn him loose and see what he could do. We just saw it.
Welcome back to the show. BJ, before Chiefs fans even knew about Jamaal Charles, the running game in Kansas City belonged to a man named Priest Holmes. And that's why last season he earned the well-deserved honor of joining the elite company in the Arrowhead Stadium Ring of Honor.
Pete, when I think of Priest Holmes, I think of production. I think of touchdowns. I think of yards. But I also think of that offensive line he got to play behind. Arguably one of the best offensive lines in NFL history. But between 2001 and 2003, Priest Holmes had 61 total touchdowns and 6,566 combined yards. That's a ridiculous amount. Those are video game numbers, Pete, and that's what I think of when I think of Priest Holmes.
Yeah, there's no doubt that it's hard to think about Chiefs history without Priest Holmes coming to mind. But BJ, as you all know, even the greatest players in a franchise need to start somewhere. And for Holmes, we track back to the year 2001, to a cloudy day in Washington.
The first time you went, okay, this guy can be good, was the game in Washington.
For Dick Vermeil, it is a building process. He's got something that he's working with right now. And the Chiefs' offensive players believe this might be the week that they finally break out and start doing things.
We were in Washington. We were trying to get our first win.
And, you know, Priest and I are going back and forth with carries. And
I like the combination, Tony Richardson and Priest Holmes. This is a good power running, quick hitting combination that appears to work for him.
Until today, it really hadn't worked for him.
And all of a sudden, he just starts taking off.
And we explode.
Green. Again, good time. Finding Holmes running down the side. Breaks a tackle. Appears. Got a block inside. And a
It's a touchdown.
This cat comes out of nowhere, and I'm like, who is this kid?
Up the middle, it goes to Holmes. Huge push and drives into the end zone.
What a run. I said, I'd love to see this guy turn him loose and see what he can do. We just saw it.
We watched Priest just sort of elevate his game, and once he started getting, hey, I can do this, or we'll do this, and we'll do that, that's when you knew he arrived.
First and 10 handoff. Here comes Holmes, a block ahead, provided by Danny Willis. He's going to go in for a touchdown. Unbelievable run by Priest Holmes. His third touchdown today.
You know, you see, you know, flashes of like, you know, Emmitt Smith. You see flashes of guys like Barry Sanders, and that's, you know, rare to even put running backs in that category. But Priest has something special. For me personally, that's when I kind of knew that this isn't the normal running back. He is very, you know, he has a gift.
Sensational run by Priest Holmes.
He showed he was a big play waiting to happen on every handoff. Whether it was catching the ball in the flat on a screen, whether it was just a handoff between the tackles outside, you just never knew what play could go for big yardage. And he started doing that against the Redskins.
Priest Holmes is back in business. He has a receiving touchdown, two rushing touchdowns, and the Chiefs are shredding the Redskin defense.
Priest Holmes established the fact that, no, this offense was going to run through him.
And then after that happened, Tony Richardson stepped up and he says, you know what, you know, I know that they've kind of been, you know, allowing me to run the ball because I was a running back last year, but I really believe in you. He says, you know what, in order for us to have some success, I'm going to make the decision. I'm going to be your fullback. I want you to be our running back. I'm going to block for you, and I'm going to let the coaches know, you know, how I feel about this. And for a guy that had the opportunity to still play as our starting running back, because he did the year before I got there, unselfish.
A guy like Priest, free agent draft pick, you just sensed that he had something to prove at all times.
He was playing with a chip on his shoulder. You could tell. You could tell the way he went about practice, and you can tell just his demeanor and everything. He was playing with a bit of a chip on his shoulder.
He was an easy guy to get behind and like, and he definitely became the engine of that offense.
We knew that at that point that it was going to be tough to stop us in any way, and our mental makeup changed at that game of basically we could do anything we wanted to and score as many points as we wanted to against any team.
And you see the potential of our offense both in our quarterback and our running back. But that really encouraged me and encouraged everybody. Hey, we are on the right track. We just be patient. Don't panic. Keep doing what we're doing and try to do it better. That eventually we're going to be a good football team.
Things started gelling and coming together, and that was, you know, that was good to see.
Well, as I sit here and talk about it, I get excited because it was so fun to watch these guys play.
Here's a handoff to Priest Holmes around the side.
And again, some razzle-dazzle.
Holmes with a stutter-step move. It's the shifty and elusive Priest Holmes.
All the way across the field. Look out. Holmes 35-30. Breaks the tackle. Gets a downfield block.
And here he goes. Breaking the tackle at the 5, and he's into the end zone.
Left side has a hole. 25-20 into the secondary. Angles left hand, 5, touchdown, Kansas City.
For me, it was really the Pittsburgh game where he broke out and had 180 yards against a salty Steeler defense.
And then like 3 or 4 weeks later, I think he gained 181 yards against San Diego, and it was his third career game that season.
Yeah, I think at that point it became clear, look, this guy and this team and this offensive line and this offense can run the ball. I think you started to realize this is where this offense has to go, and I think it was there that things began to shift within the organization, and I think that's when the fans started to go, okay, this guy's for real.
And you started sensing we might really have something here.
Chiefs Blueprint is brought to you by Hy-Vee, where there's a helpful smile in every aisle. Prime Sport, get your tickets to the Chiefs tailgate party, presented by Bud Light, at primesport.com/chiefs. And by the University of Kansas Hospital, the official healthcare provider of the Chiefs, and the athlete in you.
Thank you for joining us. BJ, with the team back in town and the schedule now out, there's already a lot to be excited about. What can Chiefs Kingdom look forward to over the next few weeks?
Well, Pete, the guys are continue working out. They're going to continue with phase one of the offseason program, but not just workouts, but that also allows a guy like quarterback Alex Smith and Jeremy Maclin to get out and throw passes to one another. We heard that they did that day one last Monday. They had a chance to get out and work together, and that's something that's going to be important this offseason for those guys to develop that continuity, to develop that timing. And then obviously you've got the NFL draft next weekend. Chiefs have 10 picks. Great opportunity to add to the nucleus of young talent on this team.
You're right, BJ. We are now just 1 week away from the 2015 NFL Draft. And with that, be sure to tune back in next Saturday night for an exclusive one-on-one interview with General Manager John Dorsey following the all-important first-round pick. For BJ Kissel, I'm Pete Sweeney. Thanks for joining us on Chiefs Blueprint. We'll see you next week.